Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernan. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between, without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello. Oh, it's so good to be back. I'm so happy to be recording again and doing interviews again. Had a few weeks there of sickness and sleepless nights, as we all do. And I enjoyed taking the month of September off, but I definitely felt like I needed to be doing something. But I needed to take that little break of editing and everything else, because we are going full throttle now for quite a long time into all these interviews, and hopefully a few more bits and pieces if I got the time. But does anyone else feel that it was, well, obviously we had more time, when I felt I had more time when I had newborn babies, and now I just feel like with appointments, PHN appointments and various bits and pieces and dropping Oliver to play school, and then feels like I have to collect him 5 minutes later even though it's 3 hours, it just feels like life has gone very busy and it's hard to catch up with friends, and I feel like we're just sending each other voice notes left, right and centre. And even at that, the voice notes used to be replied to within a day, we're now 5 days max, or minimum, let's be honest. So I'm excited to get back to doing what I love, and it's this podcast. And being honest, sometimes I find it really hard to gear myself up for doing the podcast. The day is really exhausting, as you all know. But the minute I see the other face, so my guest's face looking at me, as I open my laptop, click into Zoom, I'm just ready to have that conversation. And a guest recently said to me, she's like, you didn't ask me many questions. So I was just sitting there listening to you share your story. She was bringing me through her life experience, basically, and I didn't have to do anything. She just did such an incredible job. And when that happens, I feel very lucky that someone is that comfortable that they can share their experience in such detail with not only me, but they're prepared to invite you into that area of their life too. So anyway, I could go on for ages because I haven't done an introduction for so long. But this week's episode, I share my chat with Kathleen, and Kathleen talks me through her two pregnancies. One was a single pregnancy, and then she had twin girls. Both very different experiences. I will say that Kathleen's second birth experience was very traumatic. So if you are in a space where you don't want to listen to a birth that is hard to listen to, and maybe this episode isn't, the rest of the episode isn't for you after we talk about her pregnancy. But I will say Kathleen did avail of the services that the hospital had when it came to dealing with trauma And she found them really helpful. So, and it brought her to a place where she could actually have a conversation about her experience today and with others. And that was at about 4 months, 3-4 months, she decided to get help there. She also lodged a complaint. She wasn't happy with her response and she took it further. So I think it's a really good example of not only looking after yourself, but also like from an emotional point of view, but also by lodging that complaint. If you feel you have something to say, you have the resources to say it and to take it that little bit further if you're not happy with the response. So I'll go ahead and let you hear Kathleen's birth story. And I love the way she speaks about her midwives in the first part of this episode when she gave birth to her son, which was a vaginal birth. And she did bump into her midwife later on. And it's a really nice moment. I think if we've had a really positive experience when we bump into our midwives, it's like we've seen a celebrity. It's really nice. So I'll stop chatting and let you listen to this week's episode. Thank you, Kathleen, once again for sharing. So Kathleen, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience. I know this conversation has been a long time coming with sickness and whatnot. It's been hard to pin down a date.
No problem.
So do you want to start by giving us a little introduction to you and your lovely family, and then we'll talk about your birth stories?
Yeah, perfect. So I'm Kathleen from Dublin. I have 3 little children, all under 3, and they're all actually turning their birthday start there this week and next week. So I have twin girls who are 1 on Wednesday, and then I have a little boy who is going to be 3 the following week. So yeah, busy week here in this house.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah.
So will we get stuck into your first birth experience?
Yeah, so where do I start? Me and my husband got married the end of 2018, and we went straight on honeymoon to South Africa, and very, very, very lucky, and we got pregnant literally straight away. very straightforward pregnancy, no complications or anything like that. It was very straightforward. Now, I was very sick for the first couple of months. Just a lot of morning, middle of the day, nighttime, any time of the day sickness. I don't know why they call it morning sickness. So there's a lot of sickness. I found that hard because I was trying to obviously work full time, and actually was fine in the middle of the day, but quite sick in the morning, and then go into work, and then I'd come home and I'd be sick all evening. So it was just, yeah, first couple of months was just sick and bed and then trying to work, but I got through that and managed to get on that amazing medication. It's called Caraban, and was reluctant to kind of take it at the start. I don't like taking medication. I just didn't know anything about it, but once I got on that just made everything so much easier. That was like my lifesaver when I got on that. Very kind of smooth pregnancy, nothing really of note. The baby, Charlie, he was measuring quite big from the start, and that was something they were keeping an eye on. And I think it was about, I was offered the choice of an induction at 40 weeks, so on his due date, which I took. I don't know if it was kind of, I look back at it kind of in hindsight, was it a bit of, it was a little bit of scaremongering maybe about the size or how big he was going to be. But, you know, I said, you know, that end stage of pregnancy, at the same time, I was like, just if you give me a date and I know he's going to come out, I was happy to go along with it. And I don't think you really know, like, what, and like, as much as you can learn about induction, you don't really know what it means. So it's kind of, or what it, you know, what it's going to feel like, or yeah.
So just on that then, if we just take it back a little bit, did you do any classes apart from the regular antenatal classes? Yeah. Did you do any preparation, I suppose?
Yeah, so I did gentle birth course. Okay. And that was really, really good. Found that excellent. And did a lot of like hypnobirthing. In the lead up to it, I really, really like that. Actually, I still even listen to it. I don't know if you did it, but
yes,
the music is just, I don't know, I just love the music from that. So yeah, I did a lot of that and tried to prepare, I suppose, as best I could. I'm someone who likes to prepare for everything. like to know exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. And I think the thing that's one of the things I think with birth is you can plan as much as possible, but there's, I think anyway, there's an element of, you know, things change. You kind of just have to go with the flow a little bit. So yeah, I was introduced at on his due date, and it was just a long induction. Like I think I was in for maybe 2 nights and 2 days, I think, being induced on the prenatal ward or the induction ward. And you know, they tried, like, I think gels a couple of times, and nothing was really working. And then eventually they broke my waters, and as soon as they broke the waters, then I was straight into the the throes of labor. That was actually one of the hardest things of the whole labor, I found, was the breaking of the waters.
Uncomfortable?
Yeah, just really uncomfortable. And that whole, that ward, the midwife that was on that ward was just not the friendliest, you know. Anytime kind of she'd examine you, or it was kind of, oh, you have a long way to go, or, you know, just kind of a little bit dismissive. So and just a lot of waiting around. They're obviously very, very short staffed. So after they broke my waters, I was like full into labor, and it was very, very like intense kind of surges. As soon as that happened, then I was waiting on a bed in the delivery suite, and there was none available. So I was labouring on the antenatal ward for most of the labour, which was tough, but I suppose it was pre-COVID. I did have my husband there, which just made a massive difference. And at one point, I think it just got to the point where I was, you know, freaking out. How the hell am I going to do this if it's bad now? He just kept getting me to put my gentle birth tracks on and try and...
Yeah, so was he on board with the hypnobirthing at all?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And that helped me so much.
Yeah.
So I think it was in that antenatal ward where I just really started to freak out. Like there was no break between the contractions, and it was very full on. And it's funny because, well, it's funny now, but it wasn't then. But because I was on that ward for so long, I remember there was one woman across from me, and she was obviously going through, she was obviously having contractions well before I was, and she was quite hysterical, wouldn't let anyone near her, was having a very, very hard time. And I remember just thinking, would you calm down? It's going to be okay. And then literally 12 hours later, I was that woman. And then I'd say there was the poor girl beside me who came in after me, was probably listening to me. It's just the cycle. It's just like, you know,
I was the exact same. I was the only person making any sort of sound on the labor ward, and I thought everyone would think that I was dramatic, but I wasn't. I was 8 centimeters dilated, so it was okay.
So I found that that prenatal ward quite tough, because it was just so busy, very, very hard to focus and just try and stay calm, and just felt a little bit out of control. Eventually, when there was a delivery suite free, I was brought down there, and I had the nicest midwife. She was the dream. I think, like, I was obviously with hypnobirthing and everything, was trying to go as much as possible for a natural delivery, but with being induced, I was very open to see how I felt, and I hadn't ruled anything out. And I'd been kind of laboring for so long, and I'd been there for 2 nights already. I was absolutely exhausted. I was happy to take the epidural once I got it onto the delivery suite. And when I got the epidural, I had the best sleep I think I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah, so you probably didn't get any rest at all across those 2 days.
No, it was so nice. And I think when I'd gone into the delivery suite, I was only like, it was maybe a about 2 centimeters dilated, and was kind of told, like, you know, you'll be here for a long time, settle in. But once I got there, the midwife just turned everything around. I hadn't really felt cared for until that point, you know, with who I was dealing with in the prenatal ward.
Tell me what she did for you to make you feel that way or talk about it that way.
She was just so gentle, so nice, so just wanted to do anything to make you feel comfortable, and just really calming, you know, and just will listen to what you wanted. And she was lovely. And once I got the epidural, and the thing, I was so afraid of getting an epidural, but when the time came, like, she was so calm about it and everything, and everything was fine. So I had a great sleep. And I think about maybe an hour, I think she wanted to wake me up, because I think the time had come, and she examined me, and I was gone straight to 10 centimeters. So it just shows you, like, the difference in, like, having that nice, calm environment where I could just chill, listen to my tracks, and know that there was someone there if I needed them, and just not be disturbed, just made all the difference.
And it sounds like she was someone that you could call on without feeling like you were being dramatic.
Yeah, just really comfortable. She was, And then it was time to go. And the epidural that I got was very, very strong. When they did it first, I was still in a lot of pain. So they topped it up quite a bit. So I was extremely numb and couldn't move a muscle really, like really, really. So I needed a lot of coaching of when to push, and she was very supportive and helping me. But I ended up pushing for, I think it was like an hour and 20 minutes. Like, it was a long, I gave it my all. It was a long time. And I think they had said that the Charlie's head was kind of coming out a bit and then going in and out and in and out. So they needed help from one of the doctors. And I suppose my two worst fears, or the things that I was really wanted to avoid, was an episiotomy or tear and forceps. They just terrified me. But ended up getting both. And because I think how everything was handled, and because of that midwife, everything just, that wasn't a big deal. Like, it was, I didn't even know. I remember when forceps were mentioned, I had to, like, really, really try and calm myself down. I remember I put a face cloth over my mouth and over my eyes. I was like, right, let's do this. And even, but by the time I even had it, like, had it on, he was already out. They were telling me to take it off because he was out. So it really wasn't what I had feared the most was fine. Everything after that, like, he leapt straight away, we got skin to skin, and we got lots of time, kind of just three of us in the delivery suite. And yeah, it was, but it really was the midwife there that just made all the difference. And it's funny because I go to a gym around the corner here, and I was there, I do classes, and I was there the week before last, and there was a girl in the class, and I was like, I know her. And turns out it is that midwife.
Oh, and no way. Yeah. I get so bashful when I see midwives. Oh, my God.
And obviously she doesn't remember me, you know.
It's, well, like, of course, it's, she like, does.
Conveyor belt.
I know. Don't you think that that they do? Yeah.
So,
so cool.
I ended up talking to her, but she actually lives around the corner, and she was walking back home. And I ran back from the gym because I had to get Charlie out to play school. So she got to see him and everything, which is funny.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So yeah.
And so tell me how you felt physically then after the birth.
I had a hemorrhage as well on that birth. So I was pretty, I think as well, because I was in there for 2 days beforehand. So I was already wrecked by the time I'd gone, it actually come to the birth bit, so I was just exhausted. And it was like, I think the hemorrhage as well, really just completely depletes you. But recovery wise, like I had no complications or anything afterwards. Everything kind of healed, healed okay. Just obviously took time.
Did you need a transfusion or anything?
No. Oh, okay. It wasn't that bad. No. But yeah, there's a couple of days in hospital. Learning to breastfeed was an experience, and he was a very hungry baby. It was nonstop, but he still is, so it makes sense. But yeah, it's a strange. It was a strange couple of days because it's so hard to process what's happened. I think your first,
yeah.
It just takes a bit of an adjustment, and but and as well, like back then, this was obviously pre-COVID. Obviously, visitors were allowed to come in, so my husband was in most of the day with me, and then he'd go home for the night time. But like, I had every family member under the sun in, so like, you got no rest during the day. It was like a conveyor belt of people coming in to see you and the baby, which, you know, some of it is nice. But I'm so glad I didn't have that the second time around. Mm-hmm. I think that's something good that's come from COVID visiting restrictions, because you can't get it a second, and you're not trying to rest then properly when the baby is actually sleeping. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you realize, especially first time around, I don't think you realize the impact that has on you, people coming and visiting, because you're on such a high as well.
Yeah,
but it's even more so. And then it's the days when it slows down. That's, I think, when you crash. Well, it was for me anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to share it because you're you are on such a high, and like, you want everyone to see your baby and you want to tell everyone. And yeah, but it I think that takes a toll. And you don't, obviously, the first time around, you don't know that. I think even if there wasn't COVID restrictions the second time around, I definitely would have been more kind of forceful than, no, you can wait till I get home and I'm settled. But yeah, it's hindsight.
So how did breastfeeding go? Did you have support in the hospital?
They were quite good. Like, and he had a good latch and got kind of the hang of it quite quickly. But I found breastfeeding him so tough. And again, hindsight, I should have got help with a lactation consultant, or there was just little things now that I look back on that I was doing that was like impacting supply, or just maybe wasn't being kind of consistent. And I think I breastfed him for like 4 months. But do you know what? Like, I would love to have known more about combi feeding, because I think if I had done that with him, I would have breastfed for a lot longer. It was very much, all I knew was either all or nothing.
All or nothing,
it was just breastfeeding or bottle feeding. And second time around, I combi fed, and just that changed everything. I think I put so much pressure on myself as well, to know that I need to make this work. This is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And just kind of got on with it. But it definitely took its toll. Like, I was absolutely exhausted, and he was just the cluster feeding. I'm not a person to, I don't like to sit still. I don't like to sit down. I like, I'm just not good at that. And that is obviously cluster feeding. You're just stuck to the couch, and that I couldn't cope with that. I used to find those days really, really hard. And it meant no one could help either, you know? Whereas I was so against giving a bottle of formula. I don't know why. I don't judge anyone else. I don't know. And if I was giving someone else advice, I would say give whatever the hell keeps you sane, or whatever works for you. It doesn't matter. And I don't know. Just, I don't know whether it was, I think it was just pressure from myself, wasn't from anybody else. And then I was so disappointed then when it ended. because I ended it quite abruptly because I'd just come to a point where I was just absolutely mentally and physically drained from it, that I stopped quite quickly. And I think if I'd known more about combi feeding or how to do it, or, you know, to even continue a feed, one feed a day or something like that. But I just didn't even know that that was an option, or I didn't even know to get a, like, maybe get a lactation consultant or something to help or to advise. I suppose you are a little bit clueless on your first. And it's only kind of looking back that you kind of say, well, I could have done this. But, you know, all I can say is, like, I know I did my absolute best. And that's it.
So when did you decide to add to your family? Or did you?
No, we did. But again, it happened very quickly. I don't think we had time to think about it. I think it was like, it was Chris. So it was like maybe he was about like, just over a year and a couple of months, and we'd kind of said, oh, maybe we'll start or whatever. And very, very lucky again, that it was pretty immediate. So didn't really have time to really process it. And I kind of knew straight away, same as with Charlie, was starting to feel very, very sick, and that nausea and that feeling. So did a test.
Sorry, Kathleen. Yeah. Were you working from home at this stage?
I was working from home. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was in the office every now and again, but mostly from home. But this time around, I was very, very sick again, but this time was more, it didn't go on as long, but it was more intense. That was kind of one of the things that kind of made me think that this might be more than one baby. That I just couldn't, like, I could be vomiting like 15 times a day or something, and it was just constant. And I got the medication as well, Caraban, this time, but it didn't do a thing. But it didn't go on as long. Like the last time I kind of went into the second trimester, this time was kind of the sick. It's all over by the end of the first trimester, so there was I don't know which is better, but
yeah,
it was it ended quicker. But yeah, between the sickness and then I just started to show really, really, like, really early, and I think it was maybe like 7 weeks or something, I could feel things move around in my stomach, and I just said, like, you know, it's probably the size of like a chia seed or something, so I don't know why I'm feeling things. So I was just convinced it was more than one. I was convinced it was twins, and everyone just thought I was crazy. But one of my friends had twins a couple of months before, and you know, my husband was like, oh, it's just because she had twins, you think you're having twins now? You know, you just have it in your head. So I booked an early scan. I think it was, I don't know how early it was, maybe like 9 weeks or something. However early as you can go. And I nearly booked it to kind of prove a point.
Yeah,
like, well, I'm going to show you, there is more than one in there. And he googled the odds of having twins before I left. And he couldn't come with me to the scan or anything. So my mom actually drove out with me. And yeah, straight away I could see two sacks and two babies. I was shocked, but I kind of wasn't at the same time. You know, I had it in my head that it was two, which is so strange. And I've heard of a couple of people that have said the same thing, that they just knew. It was bizarre. And so I had to go home and tell him. He was on a work call. And I was banging down the door.
I wouldn't be able to wait.
Yeah. This is more important. You're going to die.
What did he say?
I don't think he believed me at first, but just absolute shock, because he didn't believe what I was saying up until then at all. He was in massive shock.
And how did you feel?
Like, I was shocked, but I wasn't, I kind of already had myself convinced, like I'd already kind of prepared that this is what I was going to be told, you know.
It sounds like you would have been more shocked if there was one baby.
Yeah. No, what she said was when two came up on the screen, she was like, oh, there's definitely two there. But she said, can I just do a quick internal scan? I just want to make sure there's no more. And that's when I was about to pass out. I was like, I had prepared for two, but I hadn't prepared for more than two. So I don't know. I couldn't have. I don't know how I would have handled that now. But yeah, it was a big, it was exciting. I think as well, because my friend had twins, could actually see someone else with twins. I didn't know anyone else that had twins, and so it was, yeah, it was new, you know. But I think it was the thought of going to have three, because their due date was a week before Charlie's birthday, so I was going to have kind of three under two for a week. And then, so yeah, it was just the thought of how we were going to cope with three so small. I'm kind of I like to be organized. I just kicked straight into, let's get everything sorted and as organized as you can be. You can only plan so much. You don't know what's coming. But yeah.
So did you have additional appointments or go into any sort of special care or anything like that?
There's a twin clinic or a multiples clinic. So you go through there. Hold on. And actually, so I thought you'd get a lot more appointments and everything, but it was a very low risk, like twin pregnancy, because it was two separate sacs and two placentas. I don't really know the terms. I know there's I get confused, but they were non-identical basically, and it was like the lowest risk type of twins that you could have, so it wasn't really much different than a single pregnancy in that sense. Like there was no extra kind of medical care other than that you would deliver them sooner, and that was it really. I didn't really find any kind of difference, or I'd need to finish up work much earlier. But that whole pregnancy, like I found that pregnancy so tough. Like I think that was one of the hardest things I've ever done, was carry them. It was just, I was huge. Towards even kind of the middle, like by the summer, I just couldn't do anything. My husband was doing so much. All I could do was literally work, and then I'd just pass out. I just couldn't do anything. And it was hard because like my little boy was so young, and I just felt like I was missing out on so much with him. And like by the weekend, I'd either be sick or I just couldn't get out of bed with the exhaustion. And so he'd like take him out the weekends and kind of do things with him. It was a tough, long pregnancy. And I think it made it to like about 37 weeks or 38 weeks, kind of around then. Even now, when I look back on videos, anything I've recorded at that time, literally all you hear, anything I'm recording, you can just hear my breathing. I'm
breathing,
like,
yeah.
Like I can't even catch a breath. It's just.
And it must have been so hard for someone like you, who likes to keep busy and doesn't really like sitting down.
It's awful. And even like I like to train and walk and just stay active, and couldn't do anything. So it was like I just felt like everything I liked was just gone. Tried to do as much as I could for as long as possible, but then it was just like physically, like everything just hurt. Charlie was a big enough baby. He was like 9-11. I'd full term with him, but this was just nothing compared to like my two of them. I think just the demand on your body is just, it's intense.
And did you have conversations with your consultant about how you planned on giving birth to the twins?
Yeah. So from the get-go, it was very much that there's no reason why this can't be a vaginal delivery, which I was kind of surprised about. I don't know why I had it in my head that I presumed, you know, twin births or multiple births would be section or it was different. But yeah, no, it was always a vaginal birth, and especially because I'd had a vaginal birth before. So no reason why this couldn't happen. And I think it was all determined on whether twin one, the closest to the exit, if a twin one was head down, then everything was fine. I think they kind of maybe help position twin two once they get the first baby out. If twin two doesn't go head down themselves. So yeah, we'd gone through all that. Obviously, I know with anything, there's always a risk that anything can end in a section, but it was never discussed as that was really going to be an issue. It was just a vaginal birth. So that's what I had kind of in my head and what I'd planned for. And I'd had no health issues or anything during that pregnancy, or no reason why I didn't think that could happen either, do you know? But yeah, that other than I think they said they'd book me in for an induction, I think I'd like 38 weeks. So yeah, definitely we discussed it a lot. But I was booked then in for an induction for I think 38 weeks, but my waters went the day before, which I was absolutely delighted about, because I found that so awful. I thought it seemed something so small, but I just found that so awful last time, and I was so scared about having that done again. And yeah, so they went, which was.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Absolutely delighted, and was taken in, and was taken in pretty much straight away to the delivery suite, which was, again, not what happened last time. I was delighted. Lovely new delivery suite, had like birth pool and everything in it. And
how did you feel? Did you feel excited or nervous?
Yeah, I was so excited. I was so ready for them to come out.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
I just couldn't. I couldn't carry that weight anymore. Like I just couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't wait to get them out. I was so excited. And I was so happy as well that the things that I found hard about the last birth weren't in it. Like, you know, straight in. I was in a delivery suite. Everything was calm. Andrew's there. We'd lots of. There was nothing. It all felt really positive at that point. And then, so I had a midwife. I went through a couple of shift changes. So I think I was in that delivery suite for about 20, maybe 23 hours or something. And yeah, a couple of different midwives. The first midwife that I had, she wanted me to get an epidural before I was kind of feeling any pains, and get it kind of done in advance, which I wasn't really sure about. But I felt kind of from the get-go that everything that they were doing was to benefit, what's the right word, it was to kind of fit in with how they wanted to do things, or how what the hospital policy was. And there was a couple of different things that happened with her, just little things with that midwife, and I just decided with myself, I'm not going to let these get to me. I'm just going to stay calm, I'm going to listen to my tracks and just try and let these things go. Like, just, you know, not being allowed to get up to go to the toilet, and just not being able to move from the bed. So this was the one of the things that I've had a massive issue with, and it'll make sense later on. But they, as soon as I went into that delivery suite, they put me on constant monitoring on both babies. So, which is really an absolute pain, because to, like, you know what it's like to keep one of them on and still trying to find two heartbeats and keep them on. Literally, you cannot move a muscle. So that's why they wanted me to get that epidural as soon as I went in, because they wanted to keep that monitor on basically all the time. And there was no option. Like, I wasn't going to get into, I know I could have refused to go along with that, but I didn't want confrontation. I didn't want to be arguing or having to fight for anything. So I just kind of went and tried to stay calm and just went along and let that, like, I suppose, the constant monitoring. But that went on. So what's the drug they give you? Pitocin?
Pitocin.
Yeah, Pitocin. So I was given Pitocin then to try and escalate things. I hadn't felt a contraction. There was nothing. I hadn't felt anything. But I had an epidural. But nothing was moving. It was contractions were coming and going and coming and going, and there was nothing kind of consistent. And this was going on then for quite a while. And then there was a midwife change. The next midwife I got was actually really, really nice. And I was so glad, because the other one was quite stern and just a bit old fashioned. You know, it was, this is how we do things, kind of a vibe. So the next midwife was absolutely lovely. But they'd come in and, you know, kind of were obviously constantly checking with the doctors, and there started to be talk about a section probably maybe 10 hours after I was there, or less maybe. And at that point I'd kind of, right, I'll get myself ready. This might have to happen. But from when I was told that I was definitely going for a section, I think I was waiting probably another 8-9 hours for that section. And that was because there was a lot of other more urgent. So as much as this was an emergency section, it wasn't an emergency. You know, there was no immediate danger to me. The babies were at no risk. They just said that they couldn't keep giving me any more Pitocin, and that this was the only option, that it needed to go to the section. So there was a lot of like urgent cases on, and that was why the section kept getting pushed out, which that's absolutely fine. But the big thing was that there was no risk to me or the baby, and that was something that they kept saying. I'm sorry, the babies kept saying all along. So when I eventually went to the section, it was quite rushed, very rushed. And I was brought down to sister, and they started to, you know, check the epidural and, you know, make sure everything was numb. And this is where like I could feel what they were doing. They were testing with ice. I could feel everything. I could move my legs. I was saying I could feel things. And then it felt like it was just, okay, we'll top it up. Okay, starting surgery. It was so rushed. And they made obviously the incision and started. And I just, like, I went into absolute convulsions. Because I could feel everything. Now, there was some, there was obviously some, because I'd had the epidural, there was some numbness there, but it was in no way strong enough for a surgery. Like, I have never, and I hope I'd never experienced pain ever like it again. I was just, completely just convulsing with the pain. And at that point, like, they had one baby out, and this is the bit that where the it was just so traumatic to wait so long, I suppose, to meet your babies, that when they take them out that you can't even look at them, because I wasn't there. Do you know what I mean? I was trying. Yeah, I don't know. I remember they brought the first baby over, which is Matilda, and they tried to get me to hold her. I couldn't even, at one point I said, can you just take her away? Like, I couldn't function. I was in so much pain. And at that point, they had the anesthesiologist stayed. She came in and stayed with me. And like tried to calm me down and offered a general anesthetic. But at that point, like, it had already happened. Like, they were, you know, and so I declined. I knew I just had to get through the next couple of minutes to get the next baby out. And then now she stayed with me and she talked me through everything. And you know, kind of told me what they were doing, so that I was like, you don't need to tell me what they're doing, I know what they're doing. It was awful. And after that, so babies came out and they stitched me up and everything, and then I was brought into recovery. And this is the bit that I really struggle with. I understand that things can go wrong with anesthetic and epidurals, and I know, you know, you sign a waiver that, you know, things can happen and so on, and there's a risk there. Like, as much as I felt everything was rushed and they knew that I was in pain, it was the next bit really that really that I struggled with the most, because I was in a a recovery room, and my husband then was left with the baby. So the babies weren't with me; they were with him. All I knew was I was rushed. My babies weren't with me, and I just went into absolute panic. And I just felt I couldn't trust anything that was happening around me. Obviously, because I'd just had surgery where the anaesthetic wasn't working, or wasn't adequate. I don't know what the word is, but I just couldn't trust anything. And I was just like kind of listening and watching what was going on around me, and I just felt like I had to try be in control, because I just didn't know what was going on. I didn't know where the babies were. I didn't know if they were okay. Nobody ever brought them. No, they were brought in at one time, but no one even told my husband where I was, or he wasn't even shown to come in to check or to let me know that everything was okay, or to just try and, you know, recover. They tried to bring the babies in to breastfeed at one point, and like I and this was something that I really struggled with afterwards, was that I just wanted to, someone just had to take them away. I couldn't even look, because I just couldn't deal with the pain and everything that was going on. And when I couldn't breastfeed them, I had expressed a lot of colostrum. So I kept telling the midwives, can you make sure that they're fed? There's a lot of, there's colostrum in the fridge. And it's even the fact that I had to remember and stay in control of that. And I think at one point, one of the midwives, there was one midwife that I was dealing with a lot in that recovery room, which I think she had come in and said, well, if you can't breastfeed, we're going to have to give them formula. I think this was, I felt like the third time I'd said, can you get the colostrum? Can somebody feed the babies? I think it was about 2 or 3 hours after they were born before they were fed. And they were, I obviously only found this out afterwards, but my husband was left. So after they were born, they weren't dressed. I think they'd put them under a warmer maybe or something when they were, just when they were born. And he was then moved with them in the little, what do you call it, the little cot trolley things. He was brought out into a corridor with them, and he was told to do skin to skin with them, try and keep them warm. He was left then out there with the babies undressed on his own for an hour. And I was in recovery room, and I heard, overheard, no, at this point, nobody had told me, were the babies even okay, or where they were. I overheard a conversation on the phone that the twins' temperatures have dropped, and they've taken a turn or something, and that they needed a NICU doctor down to see them immediately. And I then was obviously, again, I was still absolutely hysterical after the surgery. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, you know. It was just, I was hysterical. And then I heard that, and I didn't know if they were, I couldn't believe this was happening, because, like, they were 7 pounds, over 7 pounds each. They were two healthy babies. There wasn't an absolute bother on them, through labor, through anything. And the only reason that anything was gone wrong was because they were literally just left. And he couldn't even find someone to help him, because he couldn't leave the babies, and he was trying to keep them warm, and he didn't know, you know, what to do. So I felt that they were, they didn't get adequate care. A couple of other stuff in that recovery room were just, it was nobody in control. I was just listening to agency staff after agency staff, you know, coming in and getting an update, and just the only way I could describe it was absolute chaos. Like, there was no sense of anyone was in charge, or I couldn't trust anything that was happening there. But after a couple of hours, then I got to go back to the ward, and was reunited with Andrew, my husband, and the babies. And I just, like, I'm with the two of us, just were looking at each other, and we just said that this, like, that everything that has gone on there is so wrong. I was just disgusted at how everything was handled, and I obviously at that point didn't even know what had happened with them. Then I tried to then put everything behind me, because I knew
that's going to be my next question.
Yeah, because I knew, like, as much as Andrew was allowed in, restrictions had been lifted, which I am so grateful for. I honestly don't know how people did it in full lockdowns, or I really don't know. Because he was there, I think, 8 to 8, and that had just changed, I think, the week before they were born. He then was obviously gone all night, and obviously I was on my own, so I knew I just needed to deal with this later. You just need to care for these babies and kind of get on with it for now, which I did. But it was hard, very hard.
And how did you get through those nights, and how long was your stay?
I think I was in for 3 nights, and I think they wanted to keep me a 4th night. I just bawled crying when they said that, because one of the babies was jaundiced, and she was, you know, you have to feed her more. And I was like, well, keeping me here isn't the solution then, because I can't physically feed them more, because they weren't latching, because they didn't get to do skin to skin with them. I didn't get to breastfeed them straight away. So, and they were quite weak when they were born. Well, when they came back to me, so I was trying to breastfeed. I was giving them formula. I was expressing colostrum, and then I was pumping. So it was literally like I didn't have, and then obviously changing nappies. So it was like there was no minute to feed any more than I was. So I just, yeah, convinced them that, look, they need to be fed more, but I need help. Like, I can't do it on my own. And the staff on that ward were excellent. Like, I have to say, the midwives were really, really helpful with trying to get the girls to breastfeed and helping me with different pieces. And they had a lactation consultant to come around, and she was excellent.
How did you feel physically? I know you had to bank a lot of stuff in order to go into basically survival mode. But how did you feel physically? What was your pain like? How was that being managed? How
physically,
did you feel?
Like, it was so weird. It was such a strange one, because I'd nearly, like, afterwards, they'd kind of say, like, was your pain under control or whatever? I'd be like, yeah, everything's fine. And like, I think that was just my way of dealing with things. But I'd never experienced pain like it, that it was like a I don't know, like a sting, but it was just a strange sensation. But once I got up and moving, it took a while. And I had a hemorrhage with them as well. And then another one when I'd gone back to the ward. Now, I didn't need a transfusion, but I think just, yeah, like I was hit by a bus. It's the only way you can describe it. But once they did get on top of the pain medication, it was as good as it can be. And yeah, obviously it stayed topped up when I got home, and the scar and everything did heal okay, and I had no like complications from that. But yeah, it just took a while. Like, it took a long time. Like, I physically feel like only now, kind of a year later, that I've getting back to any kind of, like, physically any kind of normality. Just takes a long, long time.
And what was it like when you brought the girls home to meet their brother Charlie, and you knew you could be in your own bed and you were at home with your family?
Oh, I couldn't wait to get home. I couldn't wait. And like, my husband's great. Like, he's very he would do anything to try and help, and like, for me to be able to recover properly, you know. And he had booked a long time off work, and so we got home. It was funny, because we had been preparing Charlie for the girls coming. And they had brought, I was telling them all along that the girls would bring it's like, he was obsessed with Peppa Pig. There's this like Peppa dollhouse, and all you would hear is him telling everyone that the girls are going to bring this Peppa dollhouse. So he came home, Peppa dollhouse was there, barely even saw the babies. But it was funny, because he just literally just accepted them straight away. He didn't, he saw them and he pointed and he was like, that one's Peggy, that one's Matilda.
Oh, they're amazing, aren't they?
And that was it.
Yeah, the way they just adjust. it was so cool.
Yeah. And then I gave them soothers or whatever, and just kind of then never questioned why they were there or like, were they going home? Just kind of accepted that they're here now. So, which I didn't expect, but yeah, it was so sweet. And he's mad about them now. They get on great. Like, it's so cute.
Do you want to talk about what you have done to help your recovery in terms of the birth trauma that you suffered?
Yeah. So it was only like when I'd got home from hospital, I was so angry. Like, I was, and I think the big thing that really got me was that I'd found out afterwards that it's for multiple births, it's hospital policy that you're, you have to stay in one position and you're monitored with the fetal monitors. So that means you can't move, you know, and you're in the one position. If that's hospital policy, like, why don't you tell people of that in advance? Yeah. And to me, that was one of the big things of why I didn't progress. I was just really angry about how I felt a lot of the stuff that happened to me and the girls was completely preventable. And that, you know, obviously at any point, if there was a risk to the girls, if there was a risk to me, I would go through it again to get them here safely. So I was really struggling with that afterwards, like just being really angry. I couldn't, like, all I could think about was that day. Like I was, it was maybe even like 4 months after they were born. Still, like anyone who would listen to me, I'd talk to them about it. And I would either cry or I'd have a rant or my poor husband was just, you know, I was couldn't get it out of my head. Like I was waking up at night, having nightmares about it. It was always there. And it was kind of like maybe 3 months or so, or maybe even before. And I knew, like, one of my other friends was going through like postpartum depression, and I knew it wasn't that. I didn't feel down. That wasn't how, like, you know, I felt I was kind of coping very well with the actual care of the twins and myself. But I just knew something wasn't right. And this was like all I could think of. So I did get in touch, and they referred me on. They have a trauma team there, and started doing some sessions with the lady there. And she was excellent. Like, she was really, really good. What was the name of it? It was like EMDR therapy. And I think I did like 4 sessions with her. And I just found that excellent. It just completely changed from something that, like, even to be able to talk to you about it and not, you know, scream, cry or whatever, or have that completely occupy my mind for the whole evening and relive the events that happened. I can talk about it and I move on. It just changed. I was able to process it and, you know, figure out go through what happened, and that I couldn't have done anything to stop that, and mm-hmm. All of that. So yeah, it was only 4 sessions with her, and I felt so much better. I just felt I was able to move on from what happened. Because I think a lot of, like, that robbed kind of the first while with the girls, because I just wasn't really present. Like, I was just, this was always there of what happened, and I felt really guilty as well about not getting kind of that, like, you know, the first kind of skin to skin, or being able to feed them. And like, I didn't want to remember their birth. I didn't want to, like, I just had a lot of guilt as well. And it was hard to process it all. And I think that service just really, really helped. But I did as well go through a full complaint process, mm-hmm. and followed it through, because I just felt what happened wasn't right. And I think, you know, there's some people who can't speak up and maybe don't know they can, or and I work in kind of a healthcare setting. Anyway, I deal with a lot of complaints. So it was funny to be on the other end this time. But yeah, I followed it through and had a meeting with the clinical director and the whole team. And I think that helped as well, just to kind of close it off. Yeah. Because when I initially put in a complaint, they'd sent a letter back to me, and
insult
escalated things to that level. And so, yeah, I'm glad I followed it through. Whether, you know, there'll be actual change in place, I don't know, but I felt it helped me close it off, for me anyway. So yeah.
Okay, good. I think a really important part of your story is that you did actually avail of the services within the hospital, and you got what you needed from them there, yeah. And it helped kind of bring you to a point where you could have this conversation, and it might encourage other people to go ahead and see if their hospital, their maternity hospital, has those services available.
Yeah, and I had looked elsewhere, but this was offered. But I think you have to be like under 6 months or something.
Okay.
Postpartum, I think that's for all kind of mental health services, which is important. I'd only known that because my friend was looking for help, and she was past 6 months. So yeah, it's
okay.
Yeah,
that's really important to note, actually. Yeah, so thank you, Kathleen, so much for sharing your story, and I'm so glad that you're at a good place that you could, because it's going to be really beneficial to a lot of people.
Thank you. Thanks a million. Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye. As always, if you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to. I know I have lots of people to get back to, and I will as soon as I can. If you want to share your story, just get in touch over on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the Share Your Stories tab, fill out a few details, and I will get back with a recording date as soon as I can. Enjoy your week, and I will chat to you next Monday with another new episode.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.